If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Everybody, welcome into this edition of Unidentified History. It's been a while since we did a version of Unidentified History involving all three of us. Of course, we did the one with the interview I did with Ivan Hanel a few weeks ago. But for this episode, I am rejoined by my partners in crime, who I want to welcome in at this point. Let me begin with the man who has talked me into using all this newfangled tech, all this software that I'm using now instead of hardware. He's been on me for years to do it, and yet don't be sitting there cursing at the fucking wind, man. You know this is all true. So I want to say hello to my good friend, the one and only.
EPP's not here.
No, he's not. So I'm going to settle for you. I get my good friend. My good friend, my partner in crime, the one and only, my bestie, PC Tunney. Tunney, how are you doing, man?
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Yeah. Really?
No, I'm doing great, man. I'm sorry you're having troubles, but once everything is completely 100% figured out, you will be a very happy boy.
It's not even trouble. It's just that one aspect of something that I want to do different because, like we were talking, this is nerdy tech stuff for you guys at home, is like talking about how nobody could ever hear like sound I was playing for, like YouTube videos or something like that with the old setup because it was all going through hardware. Unless like in the days when I recorded with old Gator and he was sitting across from me in the same room, then it was no problem. But putting that across the interwebs didn't work out so well. Anyway, it's not going to matter at all for this episode of Unidentified History. It's all good. I also want to welcome back in the show. We missed him last time on Big Five Project. He's here today. I'm thrilled to welcome the man with the greatest beard in all of podcasting. Still, there are two things that are undefeated. Three things. Well, no, two things. Father Time. No, it is three things. Father Time, the internet, and DJ's beer. DJ, how are you doing, man? Welcome back into Unidentified History. I'm thrilled that you're here, buddy.
Guys, I'm glad to be back. And Dave, I feel you. Tony talked me into this whole software thing, and I really didn't have much of a choice when Skype went, you know, the way of the dinosaur. So we switched over to Teams, and it was just a variety of problems there. I needed a recording method. So, you know, Tony's like, try this. I hooked up with Dan, DPP, and it took me weeks to get it right. But like you, I wanted a sound bar and I wanted the ability, if I want to rip something or have something on the show that's relevant to the show and pull it from YouTube or something like that. This has been like just a game changer for my podcast now that I got the settings all figured out.
Oh, yeah, the sound bar. Tony, I have to talk to you. What is it? Foobar? Fucked up beyond all recognition. Is that okay? All right.
Foobar is a changer.
I got to look into that as well. That I have not explored, but we'll have to do that. But no one here cares about this. What I do want to do at the outset here, yes, this is an episode of Unidentified History, but a major event happened yesterday. And we're recording this on Friday, July 25th. And I think we have to talk about it because Unidentified History is a subsidiary of Attitude of Aggression. And Attitude of Aggression, as you guys all know, is a pro wrestling podcast. We are on a pro wrestling network. I think that from the standpoint of what I want to talk about, I have to talk about it with you guys. And I only want to talk about it with you guys. And I'm only going to do this once because of all the work we've done with the Big Four / Big Five project, which has been chronicling all of the WWE's pay-per-views from, and we started at WrestleMania 1, and we are presently approaching Survivor Series 1995. And a huge portion of the Big Four / Big Five project has been examining the rise and, I don't know if you want to call it fall, but certainly tapering off of Hulkamania. And yesterday, Hulk Hogan passed away at the age of 71. Of cardiac arrest. And I wanted to, at the outset, because this will be the only time I get a chance, I know you guys recorded your own respective episodes and you guys talked about it, and I noticed I wasn't invited to either one, so thank you guys for that. But, you know, Tony's going to say, you got an open invitation anytime you want to jump on.
No, you could have. Here's the thing, though. We recorded at 2 p.m. Pacific yesterday.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked. But, you know, I appreciate the respect. But now I get to bug you guys to talk about Hulk Hogan. And I'll start. And I know, like, man, I've talked to so many people about this over the last day. And I'm sure you guys have as well, and interacted with many people across on X and just different places. And it's like, okay, you know, Terry Bollea, the man, wasn't a very good person. At least not since 2015 on, probably before that. But from what we know from 2015 on, where he made some very horrible comments, racial comments, racist comments, I should say, never seemed to really, really mean it when he apologized for it or sought forgiveness for it or any of that sort of shit. And that's one thing. But from the standpoint of pro wrestling and the fact that none of us are probably doing a podcast if it's not for Hulk Hogan. There's certainly no WrestleMania without Hulk Hogan. There's likely, if WWE exists, it's certainly not in the format that we see now. There's no AEW, there's no TNA, there's none of that stuff. The legacy of this guy is unmistakable. I think, you know, when you start talking about Mount Rushmore's of pro wrestling, if he's not on your Mount Rushmore, he's got to be somewhere in consideration. But I kind of wanted to get your guys' take on it because we've covered so much of Hulk in the Big Four, Big Five project. We've gone through everything. We've done watch-alongs, Tunney. We watched along Hogan Warrior, WrestleMania 6, that whole thing. We've talked about just so many aspects, you know, the mega powers exploding, that whole thing that we did when the Big Four project really, when DJ was kind of brought onto this thing and we hit our stride, so to speak. So, DJ, let me go to you first, man. Get your thoughts on the passing of Hulkamania, the legacy of this guy, and just kind of get your feelings on it is a tragedy. I'm going to be as interested as anybody to see what sort of reaction he gets on SmackDown tonight. Hopefully people aren't going to just boo and shit all over it, but who knows? But I want to see, let me go to you first, get your thoughts on this.
Obviously, this is a big part of my childhood. It's gone. Hulk Hogan brought, like you said, and like we said on the Mindless Wrestling podcast last night, he is the reason most of us are now doing this. This is how I met. I would never have met you and Tunney. I wouldn't be sitting here doing this if Hulk Hogan never happened. So, yeah, that part of it sucks. You know, and the difficult part of this when we talk about his legacy is his legacy should be what he meant to the industry, what he brought to the industry, and what the industry became in the wake of him becoming the not just a wrestling superstar, but a crossover pop culture icon. And I think people miss that nuance when they talk about Hogan because they talk about, oh, he was never a great wrestler. He was never this. It's not the point. You know, it's not the point that he couldn't, you know, do a Hurricane Rana or, you know, a Tornado Sunrise or whatever the hell you want to call him. It's what he brought to wrestling was eyes. And unfortunately, a guy who was the center point, the focal point, and quite frankly, the catalyst of two of the biggest booms in the wrestling business history, his legacy is now the other thing. And, you know, I guess the most disappointing part for me is that all he had to do was a genuine, hey, look, I'm not that guy anymore. I said some things 10, 12 years ago that I'm not proud of. I don't feel that way. And instead, it was more, hey, I'm sorry I got caught. And I think that stinks, you know, all around. And, you know, the biggest takeaway that I see on social media is it's, God, I hate to put it this way, it's black or white. You're either mourning the guy and genuinely just trying to get your thoughts out there, or you're absolutely dancing on his grave. And occasionally you find somebody in the middle. I don't want to fault anybody for feeling the way they feel, but also understand that a lot of people in this industry today are still eating off the table he said. So.
Yeah, and that's well put. And there's you're absolutely right. Reactions across social media are pretty wild. And I get what, like you're saying, people have the right to feel how they want to feel. That's fine. Right. Celebrating the man's death is where I kind of draw the line and say, okay, that's going too fucking far. You can sit there and say he was a racist. I'm not going to really, you know, acknowledge it one way or the other, but to actually openly celebrate his death. Whereas, yeah, like you're saying, none of us are talking about any of this stuff. Well, UFOs maybe, but not pro wrestling without Hulk Hogan. So you can't just ignore that. Tony, your thoughts on the passing of the Hulkster?
It's funny because DP and I, you know, one of my favorite things about being involved with a lot of shows on Chairshot Radio Network is the pre-show routine is very specific to each group. And it's so crazy. Like, and I see it more than anybody, right? But you two guys are like, DJ has this fucking shit-eating grin on his face and knows exactly what he's talking about, right? Some of them are like, here's when we start, be here. There's not a lot of chat. We're going to go. And then I already threw Ray and Andrew under the bus last night on DWI anyway. It takes us 35 minutes to start the fucking show, right? So we have that everywhere and in between. But yesterday, Dan and I, usually it's like we don't talk much during the week, but we've been doing it forever. And we're like literal best friends since freshman year of high school. Right. And we're in our mid 40s. So first, I always ask Dan, and you guys have been on the show, who's is it you or me? Right. And Dan will either say, I got to go back to work. Can you do it? Or Dan's like, no, I got it. And then that's who records. That's who plays the majority of the sound. I asked that question. I said, let's just start the show. And he goes, well, what are we going to talk about? I go, well, we already had like this favorite fives thing we were going to do just for a non kind of evergreen show. I was like, well, you know what we're doing? And I said, you know what we're going to start the show with? And he's like, okay. Because I had messaged you guys, pull back full curtain, cheer shot radio thread. I don't know if I even want to talk about this on the show. So we did, unbeknownst to me, Dan put a little, like, very brief Real American sadness tribute before our open. It went right into our open. And then we started the show with me saying, I don't want to talk about the immediate past, right? Like, I'm not happy about it. It's interesting to me because maligned and contrition are two very important words. The two men were here because of Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan, because WrestleMania era doesn't happen without both of them, are both very much maligned. And in Hulk's case, it's because there was zero contrition. All he had to do was be contrite. And he was not. He was, like DJ said, sorry I got caught. And I'm actually the victim here. He turned it all the way around. Now, I know he was in the middle of a court case. I get it. That part. But it's still not right. Just because I understand why doesn't mean it's right. Now, what I do want to talk about, it is true. Without Vince bringing him back after his dad didn't want him anymore because he went and did Rocky III, and Vince knew he needed him, and no other combination could have done what they did. Would we have some form or other? Maybe. But it would be like the way it is? Probably not, and we'll never fucking know. But I will end it with this. He started WrestleMania. He was damn near in every one of the first, how many was it now, right?
He was in
eight or nine, right? Yeah.
He
can be argued the greatest babyface of all time. He can also be argued the greatest heel of all time. He's a part of one of the greatest tag teams of all time with the Macho Man. He's the leader and founder of one of the greatest factions of all time in the NWO. Not to mention when he came back to WWE after the collapse of WCW, he had one hell of a fucking run winning championships, right? It's sad all the way around. And I'll end it the same way I ended it last night. My thoughts and prayers go out to the friends and family of Hulk Hogan.
And that's a great way to put it. But you're so right. When you really think about his legacy, I mean, and you can't say that about anybody else, right? I mean, the stuff you just said, Tony, really resonates. How many people can you say he was the greatest face and the greatest heel of all time? Show me. You can't. I mean, Savage is kind of the only one who even kind of remotely comes close, and that's not really that close. But yeah, I mean, you know, greatest, one of the best tag teams of all time, one of the best storylines of all, second only to the Bloodline, maybe, right? And that's debatable. Greatest faction of all time. You know, he's
up there with DX, like arguable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. More influential NWO for sure. When you think about who made a bigger,
I think Bloodline's up there now too, but yeah, NWO. Yeah, for sure. I mean,
sure.
NWO template for everything that came after it.
But yeah, exactly. Exactly. So before we cut out of Hulk Hogan and move on to UAPs and get more serious about stuff, Tony, I'll go to you first. Your favorite Hulk Hogan match.
I mean, you know it.
I do.
I've told the story of knowing Frankie DeFalco, Frankie the Thumper DeFalco, probably 100 times on this very radio network. And like, I knew Ultimate Warrior was going to beat Hulk Hogan as an 8-year-old, because I knew someone that was in the business, right? And Frankie DeFalco, while people would use the term jobber, is a guy who had multiple intercontinental championship matches with big names, right? So Frankie's a guy, like, and Bubba, him and Bubba, he knows Bubba. Bubba knows him. He still talks. He's been on Busted Open. But yeah, my dad played ball with Frankie, and Frankie, that August in 89 beforehand, was like, your boy's going to win, because he knew he was a Warrior fan as an 8-year-old, right? I'm hip to the business at 8.
Way to ruin Christmas, pal.
I loved it though. I loved it. I told all my friends that I was like Nostra dumbass, right? It was fucking amazing.
Nostra dumbass. Wow. DJ, what's your favorite Hulk Hogan? Sorry, Tony. Go
ahead. No. I really apologize. Yeah, I just want to say that match though, it still delivers today.
Right. And we did that watch along of it not so long ago, and it was still great watching it back even back then. Deej, what's your favorite Hogan match?
I'm going to go outside of the box here a little bit, because there's two that were kind of back and forth, and I think this one ekes it out. The street fight that he had with Vince McMahon.
Yes. At,
I think, was it 17?
It's 19.
19. There's just so much good storytelling, and it was like the exclamation point of 19 years of a story of history between these guys. And the payoff was just phenomenal. Both guys got violent. They got in there. They got after it. It was just, to me, that's a match I go back and watch probably once a year.
I think for me, it's Andre, WrestleMania 3. I love the match with The Rock at 18. But, you know, that is a match you, like we've talked about it, you have to watch that with the sound on. If you watch it with the sound off, not that big a deal. It's not that great a match. Hogan Andre, you can watch with the sound off, and it still carries and reverberates with you because of the magnitude of that match and what Hulk accomplished that night. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's WrestleMania 3, but I agree with what Tony said. My thoughts, prayers, condolences are to Hulk's family, his friends, everybody in the industry, and let's leave it there. So moving into what we're really here to talk about, unidentified history, we will be covering the Trinity UFO case at the back end of this episode, which is, it's the second historical event we've talked about, and probably number one as far as controversy, or at least top five as far as most controversial sightings and UFO events, as to whether it is something I'm starting with this episode, where we will decide whether Trinity, is it legit or bullshit? So I need to trademark that probably. But anyway, before we get there, though, I wanted to talk to you guys about kind of where we are since we recorded last or talked about UAPs last. And good God, I've been kidding around with like Andy and Dan, Andy from that UFO podcast, Andy will be coming on with us to talk about Roswell when we get to that. And that's going to be great, because Andy's got a, and I want to put over Andy real quick. he does have a book coming out. He's published a book. It's available for pre-order. The Atlas of UFOs, I believe, is what he's is what it is. 34 case histories of some of the, and it's not all, you know, real well-known UFO cases, but I'm pretty sure Roswell is in there. But Andy knows about as much about this stuff as anybody. So he said, sure, I'll come on when you guys get to Roswell. But like, just kind of like listening to some of the stuff that's been going on lately. And I kind of wanted, and I've lost my train of thought as to where I was going with some of this stuff. But anyway, you know, the last time we talked, we talked about so many different things and kind of where we are now. What I wanted to get into you guys with and talk about. Yeah. Okay. That's what I was saying. It's like, I was talking with Andy and Dan and exchanging messages, and they're like, you know, we record one day and 2 days later, there's so much more news that has come out that it's impossible to keep up with. And that's what it's been like with UAPs and that whole thing since the last time we recorded. The biggest stuff that I think has happened since the last time we recorded was the Wall Street Journal article that came out. And this Wall Street Journal article really inflamed the UAP community in a big way, because it alleged some things that didn't sit well with a lot of us who are what I would call believers. And to kind of summarize the salient points of the article, and then, like, you know, and Andy pointed out, like, you know, the average Joes out there, they don't give a shit about this stuff. They probably don't even know the article exists. It's just us who are involved with it who get hung up on it. But the big points about the article were, I think you could break it down into three kind of compartmentalized sort of things. One of them is that everything has been about UAPs has been a big disinformation campaign run by the United States government as a cover for our tech, you know, our really black tech, our stealth stuff, the things that they don't want to know about. So they're using UFOs and UAPs as cover for that, because they're like, hey, we're testing some outlandish shit. Let's tell everybody it's UFOs. And they'll be like, wow, look at these, what these aliens can do, and kind of ignore the fact that, hey, this is really United States technology or something like that, to kind of throw our enemies off. That's part one. Part two that they came up with is that there's been a hazing ritual perpetrated against intelligence officials, our military personnel. The American public, well, not the American public, got hit with the disinformation, but they have hazed people high up in the military into thinking that there's actually a clandestine and secret UAP program for reasons, and they never even told them about it. At the end of the day, even after they retired, they never bothered to say, hey, this is all bullshit. You were just doing this to you. You know, made them sign NDAs, made them sign agreements, threatened them with criminal prosecution, threatened them with treason, imprisonment, death, all this sort of stuff if they ever talked about a program that allegedly didn't exist. And then the third one, the one that really got people pissed off, was the Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana in 1967, where you guys probably have heard UFO was sighted, shut down 10 nuclear missiles. I think, I don't know if we talked about this last time or not. And the Wall Street Journal saying, what's that, Deej?
I don't remember this. I don't remember this discussion.
Yeah, so Malmstrom Air Force Base, which we'll talk about in a later episode, but in 1967, there's an event where a UAP allegedly, this is allegedly, hovered outside of the gates of Malmstrom Air Force Base, and the 10 Minuteman missiles there all sequentially went down and went offline. So if there had been a Soviet attack, they could not have been launched because they were not online. The Wall Street Journal, they came out and they said that the cause of this was a EMP, a portable EMP that had been tested upon our own nuclear missiles in 1967 to see if an EMP would take them out. Now, let's kind of break down this Wall Street Journal nonsense, because it ties into so much of what's still going on now. The EMP stuff is the easiest to debunk because it's ridiculous. It's like, okay, so according to them, they basically wield a portable EMP generator on a 60-foot platform outside of the gates of Malmstrom Air Force Base, charged this thing up, shot an EMP into 10 live nuclear warheads at the height of the Cold War to see what would happen. And it took them all offline. And I was like, when they started to really dig into this sort of thing, What you got into is like, well, the EMP unit that they were saying was used was existed, but not until 1971 or 72 or something like that. So even if it did exist, they couldn't have used it then because this technology wasn't readily available. Problem one. Problem two is the notion of shooting an electromagnetic pulse into live nuclear warheads without the, you know, any sort of clue as to how they were going to react, what would happen. That's problem two. Problem three is the idea of a 60-foot platform being constructed outside of the front gates of Malmstrom Air. Like, no one would have noticed that. It's like somebody would have said, hey, what are they doing out there? That sort of thing. So there's all sorts of problems with this. Robert Salas, who was one of the, I think he was one of the commanders at Malmstrom in 67. And he was, you know, they had the guys up on the top level of the base, right? And Robert was below ground. And he got a frantic phone call from one of the guys top side who said, there's this object sitting out here hovering outside the gate. We don't know what it's doing. The Wall Street Journal's excuse is like when these this portable EMP thing charged up, it glowed red and orange. And that's what they saw. Salas hasn't bought into any of this sort of shit. And recently, the interim director for Aero at the time, a guy named Tim Phillips, had come out and Tim had worked for Aero or the government for 45 years. And he put in his retirement. So his retirement was pending. He was on, like, I think it's the equivalent of a leave of absence or terminal vacation, whatever you want to call it. And while Tim's on this sort of thing, this leave of absence, he starts doing these podcasts, right? So he goes on Mick West, and Mick's a pretty famous debunker, and starts talking to Mick West. He goes on Andy's show, that UFO podcast. He goes on Podcast UFO, which is a different UFO podcast, and he starts talking to people about this stuff, and there's certain aspects that he's holding to, the hazing ritual and that whole thing. Then there's other aspects that he starts to say, you know, we could never figure out what the black triangles were. And I'm sure that people like on his side of the fence are like, hey, wait, shut the fuck up. He shot down the whole notion that this was an EMP. He said, no, it wasn't an EMP. It was a power grid failure, a cascading power grid failure. And so when he said that, I was like, wait a second. Are you telling me that they hooked up Malmstrom Air Force Base and our nukes to the public power supply in Montana? Which seems ludicrous on its face. But the other night, Robert Salas was interviewed by Jesse Michaels on American Alchemy, and it was a great interview. And he posted something thanking Jesse for the interview. And I chimed in and I said, hey, I was wondering if you could clarify what Tim Phillips has said, that a power failure is what took the missiles offline. Because I can't imagine you guys were hooked in the public power grid. So Robert Salas actually responded to me and he said, we had a triple redundancy in place so that if the public power grid went down, they had battery backup or they had generators. And if the generators went down, they had battery backup. So there was no way that they would lose power completely and not be able to respond to any sort of attack, which makes perfect sense. So that was an interesting thing. But before, so I kind of want to turn it to you guys now with that as a background. This idea that we would have used an electromagnetic pulse against our own nuclear missiles at the height of the Cold War just to see what would happen. And that's what took all these nuclear warheads offline. I mean, and now you know you guys haven't studied it like I have, but just that explanation that I gave you, what are your thoughts on that? Either of you can.
It's funny that we want to preface these conversations moving forward with legit or bullshit. And we need to come up with a really cool, like fun, awesome, you know, crazy soundbite for that. I can work on it. I can come up with some proposals for you.
That sounds like a game show. It's time to play another edition of Legit or Bullshit.
Let's bring in our host, Wink Fartendale. All right, here we go, Wink. But it's not just an exercise in labeling the totality of what we're talking about legit or bullshit, because even if it's bullshit, there's legit parts to it. And even if it's legit, there's bullshit parts to it, right? And that's easily understandable when you realize that the government is involved in all of it. You know? So it's hard to really weave your way through that minefield. And, you know, the problem is when people get attacked, they sometimes just dig deeper when they shouldn't on a stance, right? And I'm not specifically talking about anyone or any stance you just talked about. I'm just saying sometimes the thing that gets in the way of finding the truth is you wanting to be right about your side of the argument. So that's where you really got to kind of just see both sides. I mean, what we're about to talk about, like you said, yeah, I think we all are going to lean one way. But what we are talking about now, it's the government finds the government easily finds ways to come up with excuses that are just good enough to shut enough people up, right? And that's kind of how I try to measure these. Like, my reaction is always to it is, how legit was the government's reaction? Does it make total sense? Because if there's nothing to hide, it should make total sense.
Reach, what do you think, man? I mean, this EMP notion is one thing, but let me pose this to you. Wall Street Journal is usually a pretty reputable newspaper. This got attacked pretty hard, and they haven't really had a good retort for some of the complaints about this article, especially this EMP stuff, which really has some holes in the logic.
I've established in this series of episodes that I am team I want to believe, which leads basically implies there's a bit of skepticism. We've also established on this show that the government is hiding technology that is decades above and beyond what we currently have available to the public. We've established that on here as well. So in my head, even though in 1967, we are only, 25 years into nuclear power. So who knows what the safety protocols were then? You said, you know, it's not feasible that they would have set off an EMP with live nuclear missiles, you know, in a government facility. And I think as part of any testing of any technology, you absolutely do that. You know, you have to see what it's going to do. Worst case scenario, be damned, you know, because in some of your, it's no different than Elon sending up rockets. Some of those rockets make it, some of those rockets explode. I don't like to think this way. Unfortunately, one day we may have another Challenger-esque type of disaster, but these are the risks you take in advancing technology. So in my head, I think, yeah, it's reasonable to think that even in 1967, they had access to that type of EMP technology. Do I think from a testing standpoint, hey, we need to see what we can do to maximize our defensive capability militarily? Absolutely. I think that our government, of all the things we have done historically, would absolutely shuck safety right out the window to do something like that as a test run. The I want to believe part of me, it's the government. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are hiding something. So as much as I know that sounds like a very in the middle answer, I just kind of wanted to throw out there why I think it's reasonable to believe that Wall Street Journal may have gotten this one right.
All right. Well, so let me push back on this. The idea of okay, I get what you're saying. Let's test this out and see what happens. But the worst case scenario there is nuclear annihilation of the entire human species. And I understand there's a lot of capriciousness with the government and how they approach things. But man, that's a hell of a risk to take. If it worst case scenario, these go down and they accidentally launch, or something happens and they fuck it up and these missiles all launch, it's game over for the world.
I don't understand a whole lot about nuclear technology, but my understanding of it is that it's not as simple as just one thing happens and then they explode. My understanding is that there are a series of processes that have to happen for a nuclear weapon to actually detonate.
I would think so, but I'm just saying you remember in War Games, where you saw War Games, right? And I understand that's like 1982. It's later.
Shall we play a game?
Yeah. You know, like in that one where they said, well, let's just unplug the system right near the end. And they're like, no, it'll think that it's a power shutoff and it'll think that we've been attacked and it'll launch. And I don't know if they had any sort of failsafe like that in 1967, but, you know, that's kind of like, I mean, power failures, EMPs are one thing, but these things were just taken offline. I don't know what that means, but I have a great deal of trouble with just kind of like, the whole notion. And I think like in the interview that he did with Jesse, he was saying that Robert was told initially that it was EMP from nuclear testing. Like, well, where the fuck are they testing these things? You guys are in Montana. All the hydrogen bomb testing, the H-bomb testing, you know, when they started to get to that was in Nevada, you know, at the testing grounds, we're way out in the desert, that sort of thing. So that doesn't make much sense, but yeah, I don't know. I have some trouble with that. I get what you're saying. But yeah, I think from the standpoint of this doesn't add up with the tech or the understanding of what was going on at that time frame. Seems to be, it's a pretty big stretch, but going to talking to you guys about this whole notion that it was all disinformation, big disinformation campaign. That's all UFOs are. It's just the government fucking around and doing this stuff and throwing people off to hide their own tech. I get that that may work here in the United States, right? But that doesn't explain the worldwide phenomenon, you know, and it doesn't explain what's happened in places like Russia or China or Africa or some of these other places, because the idea that that the Defense Department or whoever, the CIA, could have infiltrated Soviet-controlled Russia in whenever, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, until Glasnost, and run a disinformation campaign getting around the KGB seems completely preposterous. What do you, I mean, that, so yeah, DJ, I'll go to you first on this one. Even if there is a big disinformation campaign in the US, and we know there is, that's undisputed. There is a big disinformation campaign as far as UFOs are concerned, that whole thing. How do you reconcile that with this being a worldwide global phenomenon?
That's tougher to explain unless you, and that can very well lead into a whole discussion about the Illuminati and some secret global society that's secretly pulling the strings of every major government in the world. And that's an entirely different episode. As far as misdirection goes, again, I refer back to, and there's a two-part to this. I'm going to go back to, yes, we have been experimenting with technology that is decades above and beyond what we know to the public. However, my second part of that is, where did we get access to that technology? And I think that's why we have the misdirection. You know, it didn't just poof out of somebody's ass.
Poof out of somebody's ass. That's an episode title. I mean, geez. No, and that'll tie into something I want to also talk about before we talk about Trinity. But Tony, what do you think? I mean, granted, the U.S. government has a lot of stroke in the country and can influence a lot of things here in the United States, but it's tougher when you start going overseas into different countries with different sovereignty. And how far is our intelligence community's reach? You know, the intelligence actors, CIA, maybe intelligence operatives that we don't even know about. Could they have actually run a disinformation campaign to this extent in the Soviet Union? I mean, I'm just using it as an example because that's the most glaringly obvious one to me. Is like, how do you get around all the stuff that happened in Russia? All the time, they had their own missiles go into launch mode, actually, with a UFO sighting, which is the opposite of Malmstrom. These things were poised to launch and then they went offline. So, what do you think, Tony? I mean, is that plausible?
I think DJ brought up I'm not going to even say the name, but a group that is supposedly in power of everything, right? And you would have to have some type of group like that puppeteering governments, major governments globally, right? Creating storylines to benefit them on what was going to happen economically, ergonomically, ecosystem-wise, food crops around the world, things of that nature, where they could just control the story because it would benefit them no matter what businesses or agendas they had involved, right? It just goes back to the whole thing. Where's the legit and the bullshit? I really want to put that over. And the biggest place to figure that out in is the government consistently, right? And on a global scale, you'd say not necessarily that, you know, U.S. and Russia are in cahoots behind the scenes, but whoever's controlling in this puppeteer situation is making sure that this is what happens.
Yeah, I mean, and that's an interesting point that if there is, if we're really looking at the United States here, Soviet Union, all these other countries, but there's a level above them, like I think DJ's saying, the Illuminati and the people really pull the true gatekeepers of all this who are perpetrating this kind of, I don't know if you call it a fraud, but just this campaign of deception against the entire, basically, humanity. Like, there's got to be a reason why. Why are we doing that? It can't just be about power and control.
It's the Eternals. They're doing it all for our own good, Dave.
I could see that happening, but I don't know about all that.
Just wait. Check out the South Pacific in about 20 years.
Gonna be a big old head in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and it's that. See, the UAP is right there, baby. That's what it was all about. I knew it. Tiamat Island. We're gonna get adamantium any day now. I do want to touch base, like, because DJ is talking a lot about the technology that we may have. And you guys remember the last episode, we speculated whether the Tic Tac was Lockheed Martin tech. You guys remember that? Ross Coulthart for News Nation came out a couple weeks ago during an episode of Need to Know with Bryce Zabel and dropped a bomb that got everybody talking, where Ross came out and said, I know now categorically that the Tic Tac was Lockheed Martin tech. And that got everybody like, wait, what? You know, Ross has been one of the biggest proponents of, you know, UAPs and that sort of thing. And his start of the year, very positive about disclosure, now seems much more negative. And of course, he wouldn't say who his sources were or how he got this information or what made him change his mind. But and in a subsequent episode, like the Q&A on that, he kind of walked that back a little bit. You know, and then said that the Tic Tac was built by Lockheed Martin and it may have been psionically controlled through mental, you know, which sounds, you know, I mean, you look at it on face value, that sounds crazy. But then again, you go back to, like you guys are saying, if Lockheed did do this, where did they get that tech from? Because you're still dealing with the fundamental problem of some sort of craft going from 80,000 feet to sea level in 2 seconds. 80,000 feet elevation to sea level in 2 seconds. We, as far as we know, do not have anything that can come close to that. Now, and I liken this, you know, those Russian nesting dolls, right? Where you've got the dolls and there's dolls within dolls within dolls, right? And I think either way you look at this, you have this sort of situation going on with this specific issue. Because you're saying, okay, let's assume Lockheed did the Tic Tac is theirs. Like you said, DJ, where do we get that technology from? Because either we reverse engineered it from aliens, UAP, interdimensionals, whatever it is, some sort of offlandish tech, or we as humans have basically broken the laws of physics as it's being taught to us, and nobody's telling anybody about this shit. You know, if you're going to go down that path, then we have conquered gravity. We've probably conquered space and time. You know, we've done all this amazing stuff, and these things were probably unmanned, sure, because no human, a human doing that kind of stuff that it's doing is going to get liquefied.
Oh, you're dead.
You're dead. So they've got to be unmanned, which does raise the prospect, well, could they be controlled mentally, psionically? Well, if you reverse engineered it from alien tech, that's probably how they're doing it, so it makes some sense. But either way, there's a big secret being kept from us, and it's a problem because if this is our tech, if Lockheed Martin did make this, then they have been hiding from humanity anti-gravity technology that basically makes air travel or any other travel obsolete. You know, you don't need to get in a plane. You can have anti-gravity. Why are all these people dying in plane wrecks when we've already got this shit? You probably got clean energy. Because there's no form of propulsion. There's no exhaust signatures on these things with FLIR footage or any of that sort of stuff. So you've got that aspect of things going on. And on top of it, Lockheed just had a huge loss in, like, their stock dropped like $1 billion or something crazy like that. And it's like, dude, if this is yours and you're taking these economic losses, sooner or later your stockholders are going to be like, excuse me. I heard this rumor that we've got this technology that would redefine everything. What the fuck are we doing? So, Cuddy, I'll go to you first on this issue that, you know, is if this is true, and this is Lockheed did do the Tic Tac, and either way you look at it, if that's true, whether we got it from aliens or whoever, or we have broken the laws of physics, there's a fundamental problem with this not being told to humanity or to the United States military or any of that stuff, right?
Are we ready for this?
Are we as a people ready for this?
As our human race, society here on this planet known as Earth, third rock from the sun, are we ready for this type of technology? Is that what either the major governments reluctantly working together, or a higher group of puppeteers debating, are we ready for this? Because let me tell you something. A person can
be brilliant. Say, I thought you were going to add brother. Let me tell you something, brother. Never mind.
No.
Okay.
A person can be brilliant. History has proved that people are stupid.
Hold that thought.
A person is smart. People are dumb.
Yes. Before I let DJ jump in here, are we ready? Maybe philosophically, spiritually, possibly. Economically, no, because it upends the entire system. I mean, and that's the problem, is it wipes out air travel.
Well, it's the same reason you can't drive 500 miles on 2 gallons of water in a hydro propelled car, because the oil companies and everybody who produces oil throughout the world decided to get rid of that technology, right? Like, we are beholden to the people making the most money right now, period.
And at the end of the day, it's about money. And there are so many, with this type of technology, there are so many industries that would be, the oil industry would be right out the, it'd be done. It would absolutely be finished at this
point. All the fossil fuels.
Anyone in that industry is going right in the toilet. And they're not going to allow that to happen. And I think that the fossil fuel industry has a stranglehold on the world. It does. It's how we get our goods and our services. It's how we get around. It's how we travel. It's how we go to work. It's how we do all the things. It's how we light our homes. You know,
everything you have has gotten to you because of gasoline, period.
Correct. It is the single most, and that would absolutely put them out of business. So yeah, there's a social political reason not to release that technology. Also, as humans, again, like Tony said, people are dumb. You know, we just look at us. We can't even get along on a global scale on anything. And you want to release that type of technology? You want to unleash that on the world? We're not ready. And I hate to be like that, because I would love to live in a world where that type of stuff exists. I would love to be able to travel that kind of way. And, you know, unfortunately, here we are.
Yeah. If you guys had to take a guess, do you think that they reverse engineered that? Or are we as humans really that smart that we've cracked the code, so to speak, and our understanding of physics and what's being taught in schools and institutions everywhere? That's only kind of true, guys. We've really figured out all this other shit. I'm leaning towards, we've got something that we reverse engineered and they're operating off that. I don't think that as a species, we're smart enough to have come up with anti-gravity on our own. What do you think, Deej?
My gut is telling me we reverse, if I can say it, my gut's telling me, but my mouth can't say it. We have reverse engineered this from something that we found somewhere. I truly believe that, and we've discussed that on this show. It's statistically impossible for there not to be other beings in this universe. The debate isn't whether they're there. The debate is whether or not they visited. And I think the fact that we have this technology available, well, not available, but it's out there, tells us that we have been.
What do you think, Tony? Is it us, or did we get it from somebody? And our, I'll give humanity credit for being able to figure out how to reverse engineer this shit. But that's about as far as I go. I don't think that we were bright enough to figure this out on our own quite yet.
People who come up with these types of epic accomplishments genuinely want to capitalize on them, be known for them, and at some point, it's either a really secret mission. It's a secret mission either way. I don't know. I'm in the middle. I don't know. I can't pick one side. I'm on the fence on this one. I think there are some brilliant human beings, and if you can get a handful of them together that can actually work together and provided unlimited funds, there's possibility. But the other part of me, my brain is like, well, that's why this is 50-50. That just sounds stupid, what I just said.
You know, no, what I mean? But like, I think like one of the things.
Go ahead, Dave, finish your thought. And then something popped in my head.
No, I think like what Tony was saying, there's a big point there hidden within all that madness. No, I'm just kidding. No, there is something that Tony said is very true. People are stupid, like you guys are saying. They also are ruled by their ego. And if a human had actually figured this shit out, they would have come out and averaged, look what I did. Look what I did. I have solved fuck Einstein. Einstein's an idiot. I have figured this shit out. People wouldn't talk. I don't know if you could keep that a secret. Whereas if they got it from someone else and just kind of figured out, hey, here's the blueprint that I came up with, that's a little different. Go ahead, Deej.
So this thought just popped in my head. We're talking about the government is hiding all this stuff. And, you know, did we reverse engineer? Did we this? Did we that? The fact that Elon Musk, single-handedly probably the richest person in the world, has access to funds to pretty much open any door in the world that he wants. And he is still trying to figure out how to launch rockets safely. And he doesn't have access to this technology. He can't get it. Why? What are we hiding? I mean, that literally just popped in my head.
To your point, just yesterday, Starlink had an internet outage. Most of Australia was out internet because of Starlink had a, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's mind numbing to think, man, like basic stuff goes wrong all the time. But you're telling me that we've got this stuff just laying around? Like, why Lockheed's just, why does Boeing or any of these other aeronautic companies even exist? If they own this stuff, they should corner the market. Why are you deliberately bleeding money when all it would take is like, yeah, this is ours. And that's it. Game over. You are now the single biggest aeronautic power in anywhere. Before we cut out and you know, we're gonna, because I know we're running up against our thank you teams for your such a good time limit, but we'll on the back end we'll do Trinity. You know, a lot of stuff about hearings coming up, trying to get more people coming in. More congressional hearings are set for September. Lots of people wanting first-hand witnesses coming out saying, I don't think you guys can offer us protection or offer our families protection. And you look at, like, you know, people like David Grush, who came forward. As soon as he came forward, he was labeled as having PTSD. And lo and behold, his medical records are leaked. So I get it, where a lot of these whistleblowers who they may want to come testify are less than enthused with the government's ability to protect them. So I don't know if you guys got any thoughts on that, but DJ's like, no, I'm cool. He's... All right. On that note, I think, you know, we've touched bases, kind of got caught up. I mean, the news changes all the time, but I did want to kind of go into some of those areas with you, because they are, you know, the whole notion of whether we've been running a PSYOP on our own military for all these years is certainly problematic. If you really think about, that's what we've been doing this whole time. These poor people have been thinking that it's one thing when it's really all bullshit. You know, that's not legit. That's bullshit. So, but anyway, I think, Tony, what we should do is we should take a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to dig into Trinity and talk about one of the most controversial UFO events ever, really. Maybe number one most controversial event of all time. So with that being said, you are listening to Unidentified History. You're listening to The Attitude of Aggression. We are a part of the Chairshot Radio Network, where you can get all sorts of cool stuff. Tony, you want to tell people where to get some cool Chairshot merch and then hit that commercial?
Oh, yeah, real quick. ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. Check it out. Plenty of great designs. That's ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. We'll be right back after this.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, welcome back into Unidentified History on this episode. We just kind of got caught up a little bit. I mean, there's so much else we could talk about, but I do want to get to the main thrust of, you know, and you know how much we love main thrusts here on Attitude of Aggression. So we're going to get into, Tony, don't you look at me that way. You know, it's just...
We're getting deep into it.
We are getting deep into it. The historical aspect of this episode of Unidentified History, is our second historical deep dive, is we're looking at Trinity. And for those of you who know, Trinity, of course, is the site of the first atomic bomb test. This is where the Manhattan Project was tested, at the Trinity test site in New Mexico. And this stuff happens. This incident allegedly happens on August 16th, 1945, which I believe is just a couple days after. So they do the test in, when I got to actually look this stuff up, but I got to go in there. But they do this test at Trinity. They, of course, then launch or drop the bomb, the atomic bombs, on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I believe the Japanese surrender, if I remember, it's like August 14th, 1945. I'm gonna look this up on this lovely thing called the internet to see what's going on. But a couple of days, apparently, after the Japanese surrender to officially end World War II, we get this incident that takes place very close to the Trinity test site. Yeah, Japan surrendered August 15th, 1945.
September 2nd, 1945.
The Japanese surrendered? No. Oh, the document was signed.
Officially September 2nd. Right. The surrender was made on August 14th.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So we're within a couple days here. But what happens is, on August 16th, 1945, at the Padilla Family Ranch, which we're saying is it's about 18 miles northwest of the Trinity test site in New Mexico. This is 5 weeks after they first did the first atomic bomb detonation at Trinity. You get this incident that takes place. Now, here's in the whole legit or bullshit, and you got to keep that in mind as we talk about a lot of what's going on with Trinity. Nobody knew about this incident until 2003. And that's like red flag number one on this incident, is that nobody knows about this till 2003. And it gets really popularized and fleshed out in a book by Jacques Vallée and Paola Harris in 2021. And I'm actually reading the book right now, which is interesting. And I think it's like the third edition. Jacques Vallée's involvement in this whole situation is what, because if you take him out of this equation, guys, I would be like, nah, man, there's no credibility to this at all. But the fact that Jacques Vallée, who is one of the most respected people in ufology, and a very pragmatic sort of guy who has not subscribed that this is extraterrestrials, he believes that this is more interdimensional. He's been very, like, middle of the road. He's come down on skeptics and believers alike. Jacques is kind of the guy who really set the table for a lot of people in this thing. If he's not involved in this, I wouldn't give this a time of day. The fact that he is involved and has stayed to this day saying there is something here is the only reason why I give this any sort of credibility at all. But the general gist of what happens is you got these two witnesses. They're 9 and 7 at the time that this incident happens. Jose Padilla, Remisio Baca, I think Remy Baca is how they talk. They're 9 and 7. They're working on the family ranch. They hear a crash. They see what they say is an avocado-shaped object crashes into, I believe it's like a weather vane or something like that, or a windmill or something, slams into the ground, leaves a 30-foot wide gash in the ground, scorches the surrounding area. They claim that there's this hole in the side of this avocado shaped thing. They see beings inside scurrying around. They seem hurt. One of the kids says that they were screaming. Padilla, I think one of them said that they were screaming like a rabbit who's been shot or something like that. There's some indication that they were describing them as like a mantid sort of beings, like insectoid sort of thing. But when you actually read Trinity, that this book, that's not really clear to me. So I kind of dispute some of that. They say they did look like fire ants standing on their hind legs. But at other times, they're described as humanoids, maybe what we would commonly refer to as the Greys, which are more and more believed to be androids or some sort of synthetic sort of, I don't know, you know, something that's not really human and not really alive, but kind of like doppelgangers for, I don't know, for whatever the intelligence might be. And then they say that the U.S. Army then came in and removed the object. So before I turn it over to you guys, let's get right into why this is so controversial. Like I said, never gets mentioned until 2003. And the only reason these two kids, who are now, of course, grown men, even talked about it was they were doing some like genealogy project, like 23andMe, and it got them back in touch with each other. And then they said, we started thinking about what happened and we started talking about it. But you got to remember, there's no records from official archives. There's no military records. There's no local reports. Nothing to suggest that, unlike Roswell, which we'll talk about later on, which is heavily documented, none of that. The story, like we said, it surfaces many years later. It's based all on Padilla and Baca's memories. These guys are talking when they're like 70 and 80 years old. You know, we just talked about Hulk Hogan at the beginning, who passed away at 71. So the fact that these guys are talking later on in life raises the question, well, you know, have their memories been impacted? Has their sanity, their lucidity been impacted? Why should we believe this stuff now? A lot of people accuse Padilla or question his credibility, including, as we'll see, his own son. Remy Baca's credibility has been challenged. In fact, he tried to get a fictional story published that was very similar to the events he talked about here, which raises, of course, all sorts of red flags. But then you've got, like we said, the Jacques Vallée sort of issue where he's saying, yeah, this is credible. This actually happened. I believe these guys. And if he's right, then this is the earliest documented UFO crash that we have, you know, predating Roswell by 2 years. So let me turn it over to you guys just kind of initially to get your thoughts on this sort of event before we start getting into some of the deeper aspects of things. DJ, I'll go to you first, you know, because I know you're more middle of the ground, middle of the road on this. Although on this episode, Tunney seems to be more middle of the ground and you're like, Mr. Nope, I don't believe any of this shit, but no, I'm just kidding. But what just initially, because we're going to get into some deeper things to talk about with this one as we go along, but just your initial impressions of this event from what we've described so far.
Well, I can tell you my stance probably isn't going to change much, but we can talk about that at the end. We're talking about the recollection of memory of 70 and 80 year olds, respectively, from when they were 7 and 9. And, you know, the imagination of children, Dave, you have children, I have children, and we know what kids come up with. And it's an intriguing read, but I don't know how much credibility with this. Now, given that I forget the guy's name because you're deeper into this than I am, the guy who's been attached to this the whole time, who even gives it a shred of.
Yeah, Jacques Vallée.
That one. So, yeah, but you want to look at everything and you want to at least objectively be open to, okay, something landed there. I mean, obviously, these kids just didn't. If there's a definitive, okay, well, how did this hole in the ground get there? Now, was it just, we get hit by meteorites all the time. You know, all over the planet, we get hit. Was it something like that? It just hit and they thought they saw something. I don't know, but it's an interesting read and it's worth at least, you know, discussing for the purposes of what we're doing here.
And in full disclosure, before I go to Tunney, and you guys have seen the document I put together, which similar to the Battle of Los Angeles document, there's a lot of AI helping me out with this thing. But it is ChatGPT. It is the most current version. It is me driving the ship. I'm pointing ChatGPT in the directions of areas that I want it to cover. Because its initial thing is like the first maybe page and a half of this document was its initial take on this. Everything that comes after that is me actually pointing it in a direction saying, hey, tell me about this. Tell me about that. Tony, let me go to you. Get your initial impressions on this event before we start digging a little bit deeper. Because that's kind of what Unidentified History is about. It's a deeper dive into this. And it is, you know, I have asked, you know, ChatGPT, I want your conclusions. I want your thoughts, which I know seems weird asking a machine for its thoughts, and maybe that's asking for trouble, but you know, my ChatGPT and me are buds. So I'm okay with him taking over my body and doing things. Oh, wait, sorry. Tony, what were you?
ChatGPT's thoughts are what ChatGPT can find on the social interwebs, right?
Usually you would think so.
Right now it's like a three-pronged question or three-pronged like proposal, right? Jock's involvement obviously lends validity, okay? The fact that the dude's kid is like, this guy's been a pathological liar his entire fucking life, and that's basically what the quote was. Because I did my homework, Dave. I do my homework.
You read. Thank you.
But I think the 50-50 one is trying to publish the kid's book. Because where did the idea come from? It could be total bullshit, but it also could come from there.
Yeah.
Right? So that one is where I'm just like, probably bullshit, but like, I could see a suppressed memory coming out in that way, right?
Sure.
So just to kind of you know, play devil's advocate to the haters and the believers, right? We're kind of sitting here with three main factors. One leans one way, one lends tons of credibility, and the other one is open to interpretation.
That's a good point. The way that the fictional book was written, where, you know, they came out like, where'd you get that idea from? That's really ingenious, you know, and it's like, either you made it up, or then you kind of, did you tell Jose about it as well? And that's why his story kind of mimics yours, or did you guys actually witness this? Was it suppressed? And then it came out, like you're saying, in a different format. That's a good point. So something to consider moving forward. But let's, as we go along here, let's talk a little bit more about Jacques and Jacques Vallée and how his involvement adds some credibility. So as we talked about it, Jacques is not, he's one of these guys, he doesn't blindly accept the whole ET model of things. He never has. He's always been a more complex sort of dude, talking about interdimensional aspects, conscious-based hypotheses, that sort of things. He's very much data-driven and not so much getting into some of the what it would be considered, you know, like more speculative sort of approach to this sort of thing. He's been, like I said, very middle of the road, criticizing government secrecy, criticizing ufology's tendency towards sensationalism, all the mythological sort of aspects of things. He's not very gullible. So that's important. And when you look at the chronology of events where his involvement, you know, really, it's not until 2017 when Paola Harris, you know, she's been doing all this work on this case for a long time. He doesn't really get involved in this until later on. And then you get to 2021, where they publish Trinity, The Best Kept Secret, which is co-authored, Vallée and Harris co-author this thing. They start to explicitly promote the case as the first UFO crash retrieval that is tied to the U.S. nuclear program. Vallée accepted the witnesses' kind of statements, you know, the timing of this, and this is where we get into kind of the conceptualization of this and where I want to kind of go into this sort of thing. Because I think what we have to discuss is the conceptual premise of atomic activity as a beacon, which I know we talked about the last time out. And we talked about the splitting of the atom and how that was ringing the bell. And I know DJ and I have talked about that, and Tony, you as well. The splitting of the atom was like a call in the darkness. Hey, look what we can do. We can actually destroy ourselves right now. And this is kind of really interesting because we just got, and I sent it to you guys in the chat earlier today, a research paper that was done that has not been peer reviewed. So it is not official data yet or anything like that. But there's a strong indication that there are transient stars being noticed predating satellites that are all linked to nuclear activity. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot, that there's all this involvement. We talked about it earlier in this episode with Malmstrom and how, you know, you've got in Malmstrom, the thing about Malmstrom is even if you did an EMP test there, that's not the only one. There's like four different sites where similar events happen. Did they wheel this fucking thing to all these places? I don't know. But it's interesting that you've got this idea that before there's satellites in the air to confuse the situation, they're getting readings and photography showing these transient stars all involved with the nuclear sites. And then, you know, then they're gone. So that kind of adds some credibility to this whole notion that, okay, there's a definite link between nuclear testing and these UAPs. But with respect to Trinity, what is really interesting is like, and I don't know how much you guys know about this first atomic bomb test, but Trinity was they exploded it at ground level, okay? And it contaminated the entire area because the explosion was way more intense than they thought. And ironically enough, and I'm not saying there was any humanitarian, when you drop an atomic bomb on anybody, like we did, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they did kind of airburst that to minimize the impact upon the populace. You know, now, sure, they killed hundreds of thousands. Well, not hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands within seconds. But had they exploded that at ground level, Japan probably could have never rebuilt. Never rebuilt because everything would have been contaminated. And when you go out to Trinity now, there's still, how many years later are we? 45 to now is what, 80 years? There's still stuff that doesn't grow out there. They're still getting radiation levels because plutonium was spread everywhere because they underestimated how powerful this was, and it contaminated the whole area. And, you know, this test goes off. These kids are 18 miles away from this thing. They're lucky they didn't die, but it contaminated everything around it. And where this craft allegedly comes down, nothing grows there. Now, there's not a lot of growth anywhere in there, but it's interesting that in this one space, there is no growth going on there. So it does raise a prospect that if something kind of came to check it out, that maybe they would not have estimated or calculated properly the active radiation level that was there. Could this have caused some sort of electromagnetic discharge that brought this craft down? Maybe, that sort of thing. But I think that's the one thing about this, that conceptually, this makes sense that something would have shown up a month after the Trinity test near the site that it happens. You've got the first atomic test, very different than the bombs that were the manner in which the bombs were similar, but the manner in which the bombs were exploded over Hiroshima and Nagasaki is a different sort of explosion than what they did at Trinity. So I'll go to you first, Tunney, on this whole thing, like the conceptual idea that from just the standpoint of something going to check out, hey, and there's this big tremor in the force sort of thing, we better go look at this shit. And let's go see what's going on. Let's see. It's actually manned craft instead of like the Tic Tacs we were talking about, that they're probably unmanned, could be drones, could be some sort of, you know, unmanned vehicle. These were allegedly manned vehicles. What do you think, Tunney? I mean, does that tip it more in the favor of, yeah, this is legit, or is it more like theoretically it adds legitimacy to it, but it doesn't really move the needle at all?
It's tough because this is the big thing, right? And I'm like falling in the middle here, which why is at the end of the day, I'm going to get to the conclusion we're at, right? There are so many different intricacies and nuances. You talk about like 2 days after what happened as well in 1945 in August. So the most sense made is that the biggest mark we make in the universe, in our galaxy, in our surrounding solar system, right, and projected outward of that, could be these readings, these ratings, doing these explosions, these kinds of things, this activity, right? Whether it's atomic, you know, nuclear. The funny thing to me is, like, I hear stories like about like someone in like the 60s thought that radium was like a good energy drink, and they were just drinking it and passing it out to their friends, and they felt great for like 5 weeks, and then of course they fucking died, right? So how irresponsible can we be with finding out what types of powers we unlock with these things that we know absolutely nothing about, right? Is my kind of point. So it's really hard to believe that we could engineer this type of thing, going back to what we were talking about before. The reverse engineering is definitely the thing. So it's likely. It's likely there was an avocado, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're getting into the whole avocado, that an avocado showed up to investigate. But Deej, what do you think? I mean, this, and I know it's difficult because you're like looking at this like, well, theoretically, this makes sense. In actuality, maybe not. But what do you think about all this?
I want to quote a line from the Avengers. When the Avengers were all arguing about over the Tessaract,
and assemble
and assemble.
No,
not that one.
That was about 20 years later. Now, Thor made the comment about the Tessaract. He said it informs the universe that the Earth is prepared for a higher form of war. And that's exactly what atomic nuclear testing did. And if there is something out there that has been monitoring us, and we have talked about that on this show before, think of it like humans going out into nature and observing nature. We try to remain hidden. If there are people observing us, if we've suddenly said, hey, we've got this type of technology and this type of power, yeah, they're going to go check it out. By all means, they're going to go check it out. And so now, is that what happened? Again, this is where I ride the lightning and kind of sit in the middle. Yes, it's entirely possible if we are being watched and monitored.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like you said, talking about how Thor higher level of warfare, signaling the universe, and they heard, you know, Lex Luthor said that in Batman versus Superman, you know, like, you know, you've rung the bell and they heard it, that sort of thing. It's all, and when you really dig down into the events of July and August 1945, if there was ever a more tumultuous more tumultuous month in the history of humanity, show it to me, because it has not happened yet. Because we went from one sort of aspect of things, one sort of form of power, and literally overnight the world changed. So if there is something out there and they are interested in us, or they are interested in our capabilities, there would never have been a more relevant time for them to show up than right when this incident allegedly happens, right? I mean, when you get down to it.
No, it's absolutely, absolutely fact.
So let's talk about the the debunking sort of stuff, and the reasons why there's lots of problems on this. Douglas Dean Johnson probably did the most work on debunking this, and Tunney talked about this. Johnson, he did his work, Crash Story, the Trinity UFO Crash Hoax, which really kind of got a lot of people thinking this is all bullshit. And Tunney talked about it. Jose Padilla's son calls him a pathological liar. Claim much of his personal history, i.e. that he was ever a California police officer or ever a war veteran, was all false. Now, from my standpoint, it's like, well, I don't know about a war veteran, but it sure seems like you should be able to look up the California police force or some sort of records which would corroborate. Was he ever a cop? Is there any sort of record of him being a cop? There's, because either there is or there isn't. So I'm not sure why that's such a bone of contention. That seems like it'd be something easily verifiable. There's a state trooper named Eddie Apodaca who was reported to have accompanied the boys to the crash site. But Johnson shows that Eddie and Mr. Apodaca was actually shown to have been serving in Europe in 1945, and he wasn't in New Mexico, and he didn't even become a state trooper until 1951. So these aren't so good. Remy Baca, of course, he offered different versions of the tale to various researchers, which of course also goes into what Tunney was saying, the creation of a fictionalized child story based loosely on the events of Trinity. All this stuff kind of really gets you to the point where you're challenging credibility, you're challenging credulity. You're saying, well, this just, you know, when your big witnesses are debunked and shown, well, his story's bullshit because he was never a cop. The cop who did accompany him wasn't a cop till 51, and he was overseas in Europe when all this stuff happens. There were materials retrieved from the crash site, notably like this bracket that they got that I've seen pictures of. It was tested and shown to be a pretty common form of aluminum silicon that was very prevalent during the Manhattan Project. So this could all just be shit from the Manhattan Project, from the first bomb, not extraterrestrial, that sort of thing. Now, of course, Jacques Vallée has been presented with this sort of stuff. He has acknowledged, Harris not so much, Vallée's acknowledged that there are some inconsistencies, particularly regarding Apodaca. He thinks it's faulty memory rather than intentional fabrication. And like you said, DJ, we're talking about guys who are 70 or 80, and Padilla's human. He could make mistakes. Jacques continues to look at broader patterns of UFO activity near nuclear events. But when you really get down to this, you've got witness reliability significantly undermined. The physical material evidence, explainable, known terrestrial compounds, aluminum, silicone. Consistency of the versions in the history provided by the two guys as compared against other extraneous and outside information, weak. There's multiple conflicting accounts. Corroborating documentation of any of this, there is none. So the case really seems more anecdotal than anything else. But Deej, I'll go to you first. All of these various factors that really call into question the credibility and the veracity of this sort of thing. And this goes more, you know, now we're leaving the conceptual theoretical aspect of things, and now we're looking at the logical, identifiable data that is here. Some problems with this, right?
Yeah, this one's very problematic. As I, like you said, I got to read about half of it, and I've been kind of, while you've been talking, skimming through some more of it. as we've been going along here on this episode. And it just, and this is unfortunate because for those of us who really want to figure this out and we want the truth, things like this muddy the water. And whether they did it intentionally for publicity or profit, or it, the document seems to indicate that they really didn't profit off of this story.
No, they didn't.
So, no, they didn't. But who knows what people's motivations are. And again, we're talking about children at a very, very finite point in human history when during a world war, you know, so emotions and thoughts and imagination and fears and so many different things that you have to take into account in a child's mind. I can't take this one very seriously.
It's a difficult one. And like you said, like, you know, what would be their motivation to do this? Because they didn't make money off of it. None of this changed their fortunes. Remy Baca, I don't know if his child book ever sold anything based on this story. It seems a little bit too, I don't know about fantastical, but just not something that would seem to appeal to kids too much. It's not E.T. There are no cute little things running around. There might be insectoids. And it's interesting, like, you know, when you read the book Trinity, it's like the aliens are there like for only like one day scurrying around. And then the kids come back after that. They're not there anymore. These kids, they actually allege they went inside this craft and pried this metal bracket loose from this thing with a crowbar. If it's true, that's stunning, that sort of thing. But that's problematic as well. Tunney, what are your thoughts on this information that mostly Douglas Dean Johnson came up with? It is problematic because it raises a lot of red flags and a lot of contradictions with what these guys said. Even if, yeah, theoretically, the incident makes sense from what was going on in the world, but that doesn't necessarily mean this is accurate. What do you think?
The police and military records are the biggest detractors, right? Like, those things are pretty solid historically, right? I mean, probably easier to fudge from back in the day, but like post-op, probably not. You know what I mean? So that's my biggest. DJ, you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
No. I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, well, see, even DJ agrees with me.
I agree with you too. I mean, and I don't know. And Tony, I don't know if you want to ask Grok. See what Grok knows. It's interesting. Did anybody bother to confirm whether Padilla was actually ever in a California police officer? I don't know because it just seems like, well, that'd be like you're saying, those are records that are easy to retrieve, or you'd think easy to cross reference and say, well, is this any of this shit true? I don't know if that was ever done, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's a problematic sort of situation where, you know, and we'll get, let's get into this. ChatGPT is the final assessment. You know, it kind of brings Trinity down to a weak, unsubstantiated legend, which I think right now we'd probably all say, well, yeah, that's not far off the tree. But let's get into more of the conclusions that ChatGPT and, of course, me and you guys will come up with. You know, you got anecdotal retrospective testimonies from childhood. We've got the lack of contemporary evidence, no photos, no military documents, no press reports, unsubstantiated physical claims. The bracket was terrestrial. So we have a situation where we've got no official documentary or photographic evidence existing from 45. Well, I mean, you know, good luck finding any of that stuff anyway. And the witness credibility has been significantly, to use the terminology we use in the law, impeached significantly. And yeah, there's memory and there's embellishment, but the credibility of these witnesses was significantly damaged and impeached. Now, it does, like, on the positive side of thing, like we're saying, it does fit the whole idea that is seemingly being more corroborated every day by this new data that just came out today, indicating that there is corroborative evidence showing that UFO sightings or something that could be transient and not a satellite does correlate to nuclear activity. So you've got that. That would seem to tie into this. Could this have been a misinterpretation as natural effects from the Trinity tests, shockwave and heat? It's, to me, I don't find that credible because, well, that's, you're too remote in time. You know, the test was a month earlier. Why would there still be any sort of shockwave or heat? Now, could there have been radioactivity present that could have interfered with a ship or a craft? Sure. Could there have been electromagnetic aspects of things that could have messed with this? Absolutely. But, you know, that thing. So here we go. We get down to, and I'll just read this to you guys and then we'll talk about it. Final determination from ChatGPT, legit or bullshit. Trinity UFO case on its face is incredibly thin. It's late reported. We talked about that based on possibly faulty childhood memories, riddled with contradictions, lacking any solid evidence. The only thing that really kind of redeems this is Jacques Vallée's involvement. If you take him out of this, you can get rid of it and move on. But it does tap into the consistent, well-documented pattern of UAP history involving nuclear detonations, ICBM silos, reports for decades. It's the first atomic detonation in history. Something certainly noticed it. But it does sound more bullshit than legit, even in the words ChatGPT, in terms of documentation and testimony. It's not nonsensical, though. That's the thing that a lot of people just want to summarily dismiss it as complete nonsense. I don't think so. I think there's stuff to look at and there's things to talk about. The timing, the nuclear relevance, does it fit into the broader UAP narrative? Probably. So it is a worthwhile, and that's why I wanted to talk about it with you guys and put it on Unidentified History, because it is a fascinating case that's worth looking at, worth analyzing. If it's legit, it's foundational and paradigm shifting. If it's not, then it's just a kind of a fun story. It's got value either way. It's not meaningless. I think it was a good case to look at just in the grand scheme of everything that's going on. But I'll go first on this one, guys, and give you my thoughts because I'm the big believer of the group. I'm going to lean into the bullshit side of this. There's too many contradictions on it. The fact that it fits the UAP narrative is a convenient truth, I would say, but it's riddled with too many contradictions that just don't make sense. And the only thing redeeming this is Jacques Vallée and the fact that, like DJ was saying, these guys didn't really benefit much from this whole situation. Why put yourself in this sort of position if you didn't have to? But, you know, yeah, the fact that there's no mention of this till 2003, the contradictions we talked about, Padilla sensing pathological liar, your main witness who drove you to the crash site, he wasn't even there. I appreciate Jacques trying to, you know, hold the fort together because he probably believes these guys. Or believe something happened. But I would have to agree with ChatGPT and lean into the bullshit side of this. Tony, I'll go to you first. You've been 50-50 the whole time on this thing. It's a tough one, but I want to hear what you have to say.
I wanted to be less of a skeptic and try and find things. You know, like, I mean, looking at the children's story, the giving it the perspective that I did, like I truly believe that that could be something that comes out as suppressed memory or something that you didn't want to talk about in any other way than to create it in a bubble that is presented as fiction, right? Everything else, though, like the main characters and the immediate supporting characters, right? So like the main characters, they're questioned by their family. The immediate supporting characters are questioned by documented evidence from police and military. I'm sorry, Jacques. In the words of Jay-Z, we don't believe you. You need more people.
I did not expect Jay-Z reference on Unidentified History, not on my bingo card. But yeah, you're not wrong about that. Deej, I know where you've been leaning the whole time on this thing, but I will give you your chance to summarize your feelings on this.
Right off the rip, I think it's bullshit. That being said, and I want to kind of defend Jacques here a little bit against Tunney, I don't want to say that these boys completely fabricated this story. However, when you think about human psychology, if you tell yourself a story enough, even if it's bullshit, over time you can convince yourself that this is real. And if these two guys are convincing enough, they can convince Jacques that, hey, this really, if they believe fully in it to the point where you can't look at them and say, okay, no, they're lying to me, you have to at least take it seriously. And if you believe them, stick to your guns. And I think that's what he did here. They were believable enough to him that he said, you know what, I'm going to stick with these guys. I'm going to stick with this story. I plant my flag on it. And, you know, that's kind of where I view this as. I think these two gentlemen convinced themselves so fully that this happened that they convinced the people around them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Something about these guys convinced Jacques that this was true. So, and he's a good judge of character. He's one of the more respected guys in the field. So the fact, but like we've kept saying, the only thing that saves this is him. Honestly, the only thing that saves this is Jacques Vallée's involvement and his heritage in the whole grand scheme of ufology. Because you remove that, and it's like, come on, what the fuck are we talking about here? But go ahead, Tony.
So basically, this triad of terror known as unidentified history would you know, that I just like to, in my mind, we're a triad of terror, the three of us.
Oh yeah,
we're thinking bullshit.
Yeah. I okay, think all three of us and our silent partner from ChatGPT agrees.
Yeah, I got, and here I what's that, Jay? Jay-Z's ready to check in as well.
Well, okay. We don't believe you. You need more people.
That's right. So there you go, kids. Legit or bullshit, the verdict from all of us, including our silent partner at ChatGPT, is that the Trinity UFO sighting is more bullshit than legit. But with a caveat, it is worth looking into because there's a lot of historical significance. There's just the tie-ins to the first atomic detonation and the first bombs dropped and makes it a fascinating historical event to look at because you learn a lot about it. It's not just what was in Oppenheimer. There's a lot about what's going on out here that makes a lot of sense. And whatever happened to Trinity has not changed the fact that if something was listening, we certainly rang the bell by detonating that blast at Trinity that day, right? I think we can all agree on that point.
Absolutely. Do you feel like the more you dig into and the more serious you take it, open your mind and try and collect these stories like you're trying to do for us here, the better detective you become on these types of things, right? Even if this is like the most far-sighted thing, at least we're starting to sharpen our detective skills as we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's only the second one we've looked at, and you could already see kind of an evolution of how we're approaching this. I mean, you know, like if I was going to go back and say Battle of Los Angeles from the UFO standpoint, legit or bullshit, I'd say legit. I think that was a UFO. I think, you know, it's either a UFO or people just panicked. But the fact that there's radar signatures showing this thing coming from the coast, there's an image in that picture, even with ChatGPT fixed it up. If I'd done this for Battle of Los Angeles, I would have voted legit. That there was a UAP that night. It wasn't Japanese planes. It was something that responded to the splitting of the atom. And that was going, I don't know, what would you have given Battle of Los Angeles, legit or bullshit?
I lean towards legit on Battle of Los Angeles.
Because the big difference when you really, there is no radar data for Trinity, right? It's all based on the testimony of these two kids who may have been compromised for a variety of reasons. Don't know why, but they could have been. But Battle of LA, you've got radar signatures, you've got eyewitness sightings, you've got 1,400 fucking rounds of ammunition fired at something. There was something in the sky that night. Tony, what would you have said Battle of LA was legit or bullshit?
The timing and then like the theory of self-bombing the station, right? To create terror, to create the blackout, right?
You think it was a psyop?
It sparked my distrust of government.
Yes. So, and I don't know what ChatGPT would have said about it because I didn't ask it. But right now we're saying, okay, Battle of LA gets, because 2/3 of us said legit, would get a legit vote. And Trinity, unanimously, all of us say bullshit. Great stuff, guys. Excellent work, gentlemen. Good detective skills. I feel like we're kind of becoming Batman, you know, a little bit, maybe a little bit. You know, I got to start doing the next episode in this voice. Swear to me. Anyway, sorry. Marsh, let's not go there, guys. You know, you didn't have to mention that name. Why did you mention that name, Tony? Shit. On the next installment of Unidentified History, we're going to look at an interesting one. But like before we get that, I did want to say, you know, Tony's talking about how we're getting to be these stories kind of lend to our detective skills. And I think, like, I messaged DJ just yesterday or today, I don't remember which one, that the more I get into this, the more I realize, man, all this stuff's connected. You know, UFOs, UAPs, paranormal activity, poltergeists, cryptids, all that kind of stuff. There's a huge interconnection between all of that. And that ties into a little bit on the next event we're going to look at. May not have anything to do with UFOs at all or UAPs at all, but it is a fascinating event because we're going to look at Flight 19, the squadron of five aircraft that flew into the Bermuda Triangle at the end of 1945, vanished without a trace, never to be seen again. You know, they've never found it. Now, if you've watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which I know all three of us have seen that, right? DJ, I know you've seen it. You know, you love, you love the movie like I do. Tony, have you ever seen Close Encounters? Never? Shit.
What?
I know, man. But so this will be to DJ. In Close Encounters, DJ, at the very beginning,
can't we've got watch the, it. Jesus Christ.
Go
put
watch
your
it.
Fucking pants back on.
Seriously,
good,
you gotta
God.
His you gotta watch it.
Beard came off his face. You know when the cartoons the eyes pop out? His beard was like a ooga.
Son, you assume I'm wearing pants.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Platt. Okay, Platt. I already podcast with someone like that for years.
Are you Winnie the Poohing it, Deej? Is that what you're doing? You're Winnie the Poohing this thing?
Oh, I don't know, Winnie. I think you should put on some pants.
DJ's like, I got your honey pot right here, baby. Anyway, what I was going to say, DJ, in Close Encounters, you know, at the very beginning where they're in the desert and they find all those planes and the ships and stuff, that's Flight 19. That's the theory, is that's Flight 19. So we're going to look at Flight 19 on the next episode. What happened with these planes? The whole Bermuda Triangle. You know, you want to talk about stuff crossing over, UAPs and all sorts of weird shit. The Bermuda Triangle is, of course, very well documented as being a problem in multiple facets. The fact that we're going to get to kind of talk about that, see if, you know, was there a UFO involved? Could there be UAP involvement? Anything's possible. It's a fascinating case study. And I think you guys will enjoy that one because you get five planes just vanishing off the face of the earth. And you're like, something went wrong here. And we're going to take a look at that.
That kind of shit continues to happen too.
It does. MH370. I mean, and we're not going to get into some of the ridiculous stuff that's out there. UAP zapped this out of existence. I know. I have great difficulty with that. But anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of Unidentified History. Great episode, guys. Thank you so much for the discussion. Really made covering Trinity a very interesting discussion, even if we don't buy into it. It was still worth the effort because we talked about a lot of really cool stuff and a lot of very interesting aspects of things. Deej, I'll go to you first. Let people know, where can they check you out on social media? And of course, my friend, thank you for being a part of this endeavor today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back with you guys. I have missed this. I have missed this camaraderie. I really have. I'm sorry I missed the last episode or two with you. You can find myself, Jason, and Rob as the trio that is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. You can find us on Saturdays. We usually drop on all your favorite podcasting platforms as well as thechairshot.com. You can find me on the app formerly known as Twitter at The Mindless Pod.
Beautiful. Mr. Tunney, where can people find you at on all sorts of social media outlets?
PC Tunney. Just PC Tunney. Yeah. Chairshot Radio Network, all your favorite streaming platforms, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot, PC Tunney.
And as for me, you can find me on all social media on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Of course, go to the website, attitudeofaggression.com. I did mention I'm probably going to start uploading these research documents that we've done on Battle of LA and Trinity to the Unidentified History segment of the website because that makes sense. We put a lot of work into that, and they are good documents. They are very informative and they're good reads, even if DJ is reading it as we go along. That's okay. You know, that's I love guys who cram for tests. They're my heroes. So thank you for that, Deej.
My life, man.
Hey man, when you take the bus to school in the morning, you always know you got extra time to do homework.
That's right.
Christmas Eve, pal.
That's right. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/attitudeofaggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. That's going to do it for this edition of Unidentified History. Next time we cover Flight 19. Should be an interesting one. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of this. You might even get a little bit of Hulk Hogan at the end of this episode, because why not? You know, that sort of thing. That's how we work. It is going to work for me, brother. Trinity may not work of us, brothers, but everything else does. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of this. We will catch you next time around for more of Unidentified History. You guys are awesome.
Now he's going for it. Campbell clutch coming up. Yes, he's got it.
He's got it. No one has been able to escape that. Look at that. The Sheik really pulling on that chin of the Hulk. The Hulk's got to come out of it. If not, it's over for the Hulk.
This is what did it to Backlund. He's got it on and he's got it applied tight. He's got those fingers interlocked. Only the immense power of the Hulk could save him. He's starting to shake. He's got to reach down inside for that little something extra.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.